much longer. We're not gonna make it unless we're smarter and stronger. The world's gonna shake itself free of our greed somehow. If I could be anywhere, if I could be anywhere in time, if I could be anywhere and change things, it would have to be now.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. I'm now joined by John Seeger, who is the president and CEO of Population Connection, which used to be called Zero Population Growth. It's the largest grassroots population organization in the United States. And previously, John Seeger worked with the United States Environmental Protection Agency and served as chief of staff and communications director for U.S. Representative Peter H. Kossmeyer. Welcome to Background Briefing, John Seeger.
Thank you, Ian.
Your organization, the original organization, Zero Population Growth, started in 1968 when the population of the Earth was 3.5 billion people. Now it has doubled that.
Yes, it has. And we add another billion people every dozen years. It took us through all of human time to get to the first billion by 1800. And now population is growing at a rate we've never seen before.
Well, we know now from, we were just talking about it earlier, the oceans are now, there's a report coming out now that the ocean life is facing mass extinction because of human activity, because of agricultural outflow, overfishing. So two-thirds of the Earth, which is the part that we don't live on, we've destroyed that, or we're in the process of destroying it. I mean, it's an extraordinary indictment of humankind.
We're the first species ever to have this sort of impact on the Earth. And it's happening at a rate that nobody can really calculate. I mean, we don't know. The scientists who follow this don't even know how many species there are on the Earth by a factor of 10. What we do know for sure is that human activity is causing unprecedented devastation on land, in the air, and in the water.
So what is the answer here? Why can't this be stopped? Is it quite simply that people like having sex?
Well, most people do, and those that don't, I hope they have other ways to enjoy themselves. A little bit of history, I think, is helpful here. Until 1800, human population did not grow very rapidly at all. And then something very positive happened, and that was the advent of modern public health and modern sanitation. It's not that we live longer today, really. It's the fact that children now, in many places, survive their childhoods, which was not common in early days. In colonial times, American women had 7 children each. So human population...
And how many survived? I mean...
2 or 3.
2 or 3, right.
And that's the case, sadly and tragically, in some parts of the world today.
Yeah, but you can't make that case, surely, that we'd be better off with half the people dying.
No, we'd be much worse off. It was a miraculous and wonderful development.
Right.
But even positive developments can have unfortunate consequences. And so the positive development, child survival, which is a wondrous thing, has led to rapid population growth. The good news, and it is good news, is this is the one global problem that we know how to fix.
And the answer is, how do we fix it?
The answer is universal access to affordable, available contraception together with the full empowerment of women. In every society where that has taken place, women and couples choose to have smaller families, and the changes can happen very dramatically.
Well, let's talk about the counterintuitive nature of what's been happening here in terms of not just not listening to what you're saying, but actually working against you and going in the opposite direction. I mean, I suppose the number one villain might well be the Pope, but the most recent villain I recall was George W. Bush, who instituted this global gag rule where there were no options except abstinence. If you combine that dogma with the Pope's dogma about condoms, which I believe he's somewhat reversed lately, it seems almost irresponsible to me.
Well, certainly to me as well. I think that there's a culture war going on, and it's happening on many, many fronts. Of course, the Vatican, the Catholic hierarchy, has been arrayed against contraception for a long time. But it's worth noting that here in the United States, Catholics actually have smaller families than Protestants. So Catholics in this country and in other developed countries are quite good at making decisions on their own as to which of these practices and dogmas they choose to follow and which they don't. Unfortunately, Congress seems to have a little less ability to make those kind of selective decisions.
Well, the Congress we have now is on a jihad against Planned Parenthood. One of the things that you're calling for is to increase money to international family planning. And here we have in the United States, you have this peculiar attack on family planning.
And it's tragic and almost, but not quite inexplicable, because really everybody knows, or almost everybody knows or should know, that the best way to avert abortion, the best way to reduce the number of abortions, is through access to family planning. In the history of the world, no woman ever had an abortion who wasn't pregnant first. It's as simple as that. The reason I say it's almost inexplicable is because the other side, the right in this country, is engaged in a very skillful culture war, and it's been going on for the better part of 40 years.
But what is the logic? Is there any subtext? Am I missing something here where they're against abortion, but they don't want to make sex education available, family planning available, contraceptives available? They're almost willfully creating the very condition that they say that they want to avoid. That's what I don't understand.
Well, sometimes I think the political boundaries in this country almost align as follows. It's between those who recognize the fact that the world is a very complex place and those who resolutely refuse to recognize that fact. And the right in this country has done, and I have to give them, unfortunately, I have to give them some credit for this, although I don't want to, has done a very adroit job of taking issues like abortion and family planning and sex education and mixing them all up. And we're very much and totally a pro-choice organization. But I would note that the other side has taken these issues and mixed them all up and turned them into one kind of cultural stew, which has succeeded in really confusing a lot of issues and has had the effect of not only depriving women of basic rights, but also contributing to enormous suffering around the world.
Again, I want to remind our audience I'm speaking with John Seeger, who's the president and CEO of Population Connection, which used to be called Zero Population Growth. What is the regime that one would have to... I mean, I think the species, frankly, is Pavlovian. I don't think we learn through intellectual awareness. I think we learn through the pain that we cause ourselves and others, that like in Pavlov. So is it going to be that the world is just going to be so unlivable that we'll finally wake up? Or what kind of solution would you recommend here?
First of all, the world is already unlivable for billions of our fellow humans. 25,000 children, almost all of them in the poorest places on Earth, die from easily preventable causes. A billion of us struggle to survive on less than a dollar a day. 40% of humans lack access to basic sanitation. So for them, the unlivable is here and now. The fact, though, is that in many places around the world, in places such as Mexico and others, universal access to family planning and good sex education have worked remarkably well. Mexico, in fact, is one of the world's great success stories, having gone from a situation in 1970 where women had 6.8 children each to today where they have 2.2 children each, and all of that was accomplished through voluntary means.
So when you were saying earlier that one of the things that's driving overpopulation is that in the olden days, people had 7 kids, most of whom died, and that the advance we've made is that children don't die anymore, at least in those numbers. What would therefore be, in terms of a kind of global regime of fairness for all, what would be the optimum family in order to prevent this earth from choking itself?
Well, first let me say what wouldn't be right, and that would be any form of population control or coercion. This is all about empowering people, empowering women and couples, and some people will choose to have large families, and that's their right, and we have to respect that, because the right to control one's own body and one's fertility is a very basic human right that must be respected. The good news from our standpoint is that whenever women and couples have access to family planning, you do see very small families. The challenge, I think, sometimes for us in this country is as follows. People say, well, you can just go down to the drugstore and buy some birth control. Well, you can't do that in other countries. First, there isn't a drugstore. Second, you have no way to get there. And three, they don't have contraceptives. And four, you don't have any money to buy them if they do. And so it's a question of providing that kind of access and that kind of good information. And when you do, the transformations can be remarkable.
Well, my understanding is that the reason in the third world people have lots of kids is that they do have a higher attrition rate, with disease, death, but on the other hand, they also need the kids to work. Is that the explanation? I mean, in other words, there's a relationship, a very clear relationship between poverty and population.
The cause and effects here are kind of intermingled. It is true that in traditional agrarian societies, for many people, the only resource they have is a tiny plot of land and a family to work it. But because of rapid population growth in more and more places, that tiny plot of land has shrunken because of population growth to the point where it can't sustain anything more than a very small family, if that. In fact, most nations in Africa today have policies that are aimed at enabling people to have smaller families. It's a recognition that this is a better future for people. The challenge for those countries, many of which are desperately poor, is to come up with the resources that they need to accomplish what seems to us like a fairly simple thing, namely access to family planning.
So it's not that these countries have to reach the level of material comfort that we have, because that's the prevailing theory, that in poor countries they have to have a lot of kids because of cheap labor and the necessity to plow the one plot. But because we're so much better off, we don't need that many kids. Now, you're saying that's not the equation. The real issue is that it's all about access to family planning.
If I could do one thing, it would be to ensure that every woman on this planet has sufficient education so that she can be and operate within her own society and have opportunities that her forebears never dreamed of. Unfortunately, and you could raise my taxes any day of the week to provide for that, but unfortunately, education is not inexpensive. So family planning, which costs about a tenth as much as education, and we should do both, but family planning can be a shortcut to enable people to have a better life.
So in other words, because Japan is an advanced society, it has a low birth rate, and the United States, of course, doesn't have a low birth rate compared, I think, to Japan. The notion that we have to wait for these countries to become developed before their population will level off is, of course, insane, and we don't have that kind of time. I'm astounded that the answer is so simple, but what is the resistance then?
Well, first of all, there are wonderful examples around the world of countries that are not wealthy by Western terms, that have succeeded in achieving small families through voluntary means. Places like Mexico, places like Iran, places like the Kerala state in India, Thailand has made great progress. The obstacle is money first and foremost, but not very much of it. It costs about $22 a year to enable a woman in a developing country to have access to contraception. Now, lack of access and lack of affordability are key, but there are also some other obstacles. In some countries, religion can be a major obstacle. In some countries, it's the fact that women really have no power, no control over their own lives. Either the local chieftain or the local religious leader or her husband or her mother-in-law controls every aspect of her life. Also, there's a great deal of misinformation out there about the risks of family planning. So there are a variety of factors that get in the way.
Again, John Seeger is the president and CEO of Population Connection, what used to be called Zero Population Growth. But you're against the Chinese model. I'm just trying to figure out how you're saying that the only regime that's going to work is a voluntary regime, and the one, and providing access to birth control, which is one of the cheapest things you could think about, really, in terms of the price that we pay for the environmental destruction. $23 per?
About $22 per right. year for a woman in the developing world to have access to contraception. But bear in mind that it might as well be $22,000 a year for some of those women because of their lack of money.
Well, let's just deal in the last couple of minutes then with the political realities here. What kind of narrative then, if the right wing are dragging us to hell in a handbasket here with this counterintuitive dogma that they have, being against sex education, birth control, and abortion, the whole trifecta, what kind of a narrative has got to be developed to counter this? Because the statistics are alarming. When your organization started in 1968, there were 3.5 billion. Now there are 7 billion. I believe it's going to double, what, in 20 years or something outrageous. And my understanding from biologists is that the optimum population for biodiversity on this planet is about a billion. So we're way past the threshold of sustainable biodiversity. And we know that every day thousands of species of plants and animals and the oceans are dying as well. This can't go on. Somebody's got to step up.
Well, it wasn't that long ago that we saw some real progress here. During the first 2 years of the Obama administration, there was a 40% increase in funds for family planning internationally. We saw the repeal by President Obama of the Bush Global Gag Rule. We saw the restoration of funding for UN family planning. All of those were very positive developments, and all of them are now under direct threat from the Boehner Congress. And they make no bones about it. So I think the challenge here is to recognize that we need to think in terms of our own survival and the survival of other species and realize that there's really a clear and present danger here. However, it's important to keep emphasizing the fact that this is not a reason to abandon our principles or to abandon our ethics. This is a reason to work to achieve them, to realize that the solution lies in the empowerment of women and enabling them to have control over their own lives. If you can't control your own body and your own fertility, what control do you have over anything? And so it's about enabling people to have control over their own lives. It's never about top-down population control. That's wrong whether it's in China or anywhere else. In effect, the Boehner Congress wants to exert control over women's bodies and women's lives. That's what their agenda is. They want to turn the clock back to some mythical age that nobody else seems to know anything about. And we have
But they're doing it under the rubric of religion, aren't they? And I don't see how there's any virtue in destroying the world and making the world unlivable. I would think that, you know, if there's a God in heaven who's bequeathed this wonderful earth to us, that's the last thing that a compassionate God would want.
Well, they seem to like to appropriate a lot of things to their own advantage. The great religions of the world, without exception, teach the golden rule. And it seems to me the golden rule in this case would be, to, as it says, to do unto others as you would wish done to yourself. Would anybody want a government or some authority to take that kind of control over their personal lives? Of course they wouldn't. So I think they're flying a false flag here, and we have to keep sending that message out over and over again, that there's a war on women going on these days. And as usual, the people who have the least in this world are the ones who are suffering the most.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, John Seeger. Again, John Seeger is the president and CEO of Population Connection, which used to be called Zero Population Growth, the largest grassroots population organization in the United States. And previously, John Seeger worked with the United States Environmental Protection Agency and served as chief of staff and communications director for U.S. Representative Peter Kostermeyer. Thanks again.
Thank you very much, Ian.
Let's now take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the new Gilded Age.
Come on.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about